Great to see everybody today. I love coming here so much every year. We really, really look forward to it. Whenever I am selling the Lima Rally to folks back in Connersville, and I hope you guys are okay with this, but I always say they are just the most real Christians at Lima that I see. I just appreciate you guys so much, a focus on the truth and wanting to do the will of God while we're blessed to be here in this life. So what I wanted to look at this morning is I like the theme. I got to be honest. Most of the time, Mike sends me the theme. I don't understand what he's going for at all. I have to email him back two or three times. I'm like, where do you really want me? You know, what are you really going for? But really like the theme, so I'm kind of going with the looking up kind of portion of the theme, the final frontier. And what I wanted to talk about this morning is focusing on what we're here for, focusing on our purpose as Christians. It is so easy, and it gets easier and easier to lose focus, to get distracted by things in this life that are going on and tend to pull our focus away from that purpose. We just had our second annual Guns and Grub men's outing at our church congregation in Connersville. That was headed up by Russ and another gentleman at our church congregation. We got together last year. We shot some guns and everything. I'm not a huge enthusiast, but it was a lot of fun for me to do that. And it's been great over the last year because towards the end of our first annual Guns and Grub outing, I shot the chain off of a target at 150 yards without a scope on purpose. Okay? If Russ tells you otherwise, don't believe him. Okay? So I've been reminding them of that about weekly at our assembly, that I did that. But it was a fun outing. I mean, they have a small arsenal out there. But as a person who didn't really grow up with guns or shoot guns too much, it's interesting for me to see some of the delicacies with firing a gun. And, Russ gets me sat down at some point, and I'm using a number of different rifles. And whenever you're using a scope on that rifle, I mean, it really allows you to focus in on that target. I mean, at a great distance. It's just amazing that you can go right in on that target. And that scope is designed to kind of eliminate everything else around, all the other noise from around that target, and get you focused on what you're aiming for. Okay? And that's really the way we need to be as Christians. We really need to kind of eliminate the noise that surrounds us and surrounds what really is important and what our purpose is, and stay focused, because the enemy wants us to be distracted, wants us to focus on the noise, wants us to see that little bird flutter by, near our target and get us off kilter. I have a friend of mine that he's actually a physicist in Lafayette, Indiana, and the way a physicist's brain works is fun as maybe a lesser mind, to watch at times, but we've joked for many, many years because while his brain is calculating so intensely, years ago we were speaking on the phone and the conversation just ended because he saw a dragonfly. And I heard on the phone, ooh, dragonfly, and just everything shut off and there was the dragonfly flying by. So we joke about that to this day. Whenever we lose our train of thought, it's, oh, dragonfly, But very easy to get distracted and get off of what is important. So what I want to speak about today is focusing on our purpose as Christians. And of course, we have to review what our purpose is. Let's go to 1 Peter chapter 2. First Peter chapter 2, starting in verse 20. For what credit is there if when you sin and are harshly treated, you endure it with patience? But if when you do what is right and you suffer for it, and you patiently endure it, this finds favor with God. For you have been called for this purpose, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example to follow in his steps. Who committed no sin, nor was any deceit found in his mouth. And while being reviled, he did not revile in return. While suffering, he uttered no threats, but he kept entrusting himself to him who judges righteously. We have been called for the purpose of walking the path that Christ walked. We are truly blessed to be in God's history at the time we are. We are in a time that the prophets of old long to look into and long to know what person or time the Spirit of Christ within them was indicating. Angels want to be here. They want to see part of this, and we are charged with this great purpose while we are here to walk the steps of Christ, who committed no sin, nor was any deceit found in His mouth, to fulfill the will of God in this life despite any suffering or any difficulty that might entail. You know, for anyone who remembers history class as a kid, people typically are remembered for whatever purpose they fulfilled. You know, when you start to sum up somebody's life, it usually talks about the greatest purpose that they fulfilled. When I say Lewis and Clark, you know, you think of them trucking through and mapping out and figuring out what in the world was in the western part of the United States. When I say Johann Gutenberg, you think of the printing press. Okay, you don't think of anything else in his life. You think of that great purpose that he fulfilled. When I say George Washington Carver, you think peanuts and all the crazy things. That guy figured out what to do with peanuts. That was a purpose that he focused on in his life. As Christians, this is our purpose. When people look at our lives, do they see that as an individual that walks the path of Christ despite whatever suffering that it might entail in order to fulfill the will of God? I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I consider that, and it scares me sometimes. You know, is it Matt the banker, or Matt the father, or Matt the landlord, or Matt the preacher? Or is it the individual that strives to fulfill the purpose that Christ left us to fulfill? To suffer within this body in walking the path that Christ left us in order to fulfill the will of God. That is the purpose that we are charged with. So, we all know that, I think. But well, I guess I want to dig a little deeper today, because it's not just recognizing that purpose. It's not just understanding, you know, what we're here for, but it's actually arming ourselves and focusing on that purpose so that our day-to-day walk involves fulfilling that purpose. Go over a couple chapters, 1 Peter chapter 4. First Peter 4, starting in verse 1. Therefore, since Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same purpose, because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. So it's not only recognizing the purpose. He hits that in chapter 2. He tells the reader, okay, this is the reason you're here. But by the time he gets to chapter 4, he says, okay, now that you understand that, arm yourselves with the same purpose. Okay? Arm yourself. We know that Christ not for one moment deviated from his purpose. And I still think at times there is this subtle temptation to say, man, look what Christ did. Man, if only we could do that. We can do that. Christian, one of the primary reasons Christ came was to give you an example to follow in His steps. Okay? Those steps can be filled by the Christian to walk in this life in accordance to the will of God, so that during the rest of our time in the flesh, we don't indulge the flesh, but we fulfill the will of God. So it's deeper. We have to set that purpose above all else. All else. Not just the stuff that seems easy to set it above. You know, I may not like basketball or something. Well, I'll set it above basketball. You know, I may not like fishing. I'll set it above. I can do that. I can make that sacrifice. Set it above fishing. But setting it above maybe your family, setting it above your job, your livelihood, setting it above that great passion that you have and spend that time on and spend those resources on. to arm yourselves with that purpose and to focus on that. That's really what I want to take a look at today. I'm really glad Steve didn't use this. I was all excited that I was one of the first speakers. That way everyone else can copy me. But the passage I really think of, you know, the second that Mike sent me this is Hebrews chapter 12. Let's go there. Hebrews 12. And you know, I know sometimes we see these chapter markers and we kind of think, okay, brand new thought. The writer came back after 5 years and started writing again. But that wasn't necessarily the case. So keep in mind that he has just got done describing these great men and women of old of great faith. Okay? Great faith, who accomplished so many things through faith, yet they did not receive what was promised. So he begins, verse 1 of chapter 12, with therefore. Okay, linking that to the previous thought. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us. Let us run with endurance the race set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Love that passage. Learned and memorized that passage over 10 years ago. And the image that always comes to mind, is that we are running this race and my eyes are on the goal and it is Jesus on the throne. Okay? That is always the image that has come to mind. I want to give you a different thought today. Okay? We're told in this passage that we're supposed to fix our eyes on Jesus. Fix our eyes on Jesus. He is the goal. He is what we're running towards. I was actually considering naming my sermon, "Sometimes You Have to Look Down to Look Up." Sometimes you have to look down to look up. Go to Matthew chapter 25. And this is kind of laying a base for what I want to talk about today. This passage, you know, early on in my Christian life was very hard for me to understand. And I'll explain why here in a minute. But starting in verse 31, I want to read this here. I think it will be familiar to most. When the Son of Man comes in His glory and all His angels with Him, then He will sit on His glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before Him, and He will separate them from one another as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. Put the sheep on His right, goats on His left. Then the King will say to those on His right, "Come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, you invited me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when? When? When did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger, or invite you in, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and come to you?" And the King will answer and say to them, "Truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me." Then he'll also say to those on his left, "Depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire, which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. I was hungry, you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, you did not invite me in. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, you did not visit me." Then they will say, "Lord, when? When did we see you hungry or thirsty or stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not take care of you?" And then he will answer them, "Truly I say to you, to the extent that you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me." These will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. If we're fixing our eyes on Jesus, where do we fix our eyes? We, I grew up under the kind of the tutelage of the Fagan boys. Okay, the Fagan boys were in charge of youth group and things whenever I was in youth group, and I Even growing up in the assembly and everything, I wanted to be a good example. I wanted to do things right and things like that. Well, the Fagan boys at one point at our congregation, we played the life game. Has anyone ever played the life game? Okay, probably different variations. No, big version, okay? We played the life game. So you have all these stations where you can get a specific job, you can you can earn income, you can give, you can participate in events or something that is, I don't know, there was opportunities if you wanted to gamble that money, you could gamble that money, which of course everyone stayed away from that, and you could do all these things with the life game, all right? So me, being the competitive individual that I am, I mean, I'm trucking along, I'm doing great in the life game. It started maybe about 20 minutes prior. Well, one of the guys from our church congregation is walking around and he's dressed in these dirty rags and he's begging for money. And buddy, I knew better. I wasn't going to give him money because he was going to go spend it on drugs or beer. Okay? So I didn't give him any money. So Ben Fagan comes up to me 20 minutes after the game starts. And I'm like, hey man, how's it going? Look at my sheet of paper. Look what I'm doing. He looks at my sheet of paper and he's like, you're dead. Come with me. And I'm what? So he takes me, and at the time, the building that we were in was perfectly designed for this game, okay? He sits me in this room with the lights off and this little heater sitting in the corner, okay? 20 minutes into the game. And he informs me later that I was there to take care of the little kids so they weren't scared. But so I sat there for 2 hours in the dark, with the heater, and the way the building was designed is that room was linked to a hallway. That down that hallway was another room where they were having a party and candy and all this stuff, So, really interesting. And of course, when we're done, I wasn't very happy. I'm like, what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? I did everything right. I got a good job. I did all this. I didn't gamble my money away. I didn't do this, but I did this. I took care of this. I was responsible. Well, I saw a guy in need, and I didn't give to him. When did I see Jesus? I was hungry. You gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty. You gave me nothing to drink. My favorite one is you saw me, I was in prison. And you didn't come visit me. Well, man, if he was in prison, he did something wrong. We're not here to have an impact on anyone that did anything wrong. I mean, we want those people that are just if they just lean forward, they'll fall into the kingdom. They're that close, We don't want to help sinners. I was in prison, and you didn't come visit me. I have a different perspective of the Hebrews passage. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despised the shame. If we're fixing our eyes on Jesus in this life, a huge part of our purpose here, arming ourselves with the purpose, is a focus on the lost, a focus on those that need the love of Christ demonstrated to them so that they can recognize the light from the darkness and the morass that they live in. That's what this is about. When I look at this passage, I see two elements. This is the calculating analytical part of me. When I look at this passage, I see two elements. Not only are we to fix our eyes, are we to keep our attention on the target, but we also have to maintain the endurance to reach the target. And I think that's really the two aspects of focus. If we're going to focus on what our purpose is here, it's not only keeping the attention on the target, but it's also maintaining the endurance to reach that target. I said this years ago, and I don't come up with many creative things, so I'm holding on to this for dear life, okay? It's trademarked. But if you take Satan's strategy, maybe I talk about the enemy too much, but buddy, I believe in being aware of who we're against here. When you take his strategy and you boil it down, all he wants to do is distract you from what our purpose is. It's all he wants to do. If he can distract you from what your purpose is in this life through 1,000 different ways, okay? In certain parts of the world, that distraction is hunger and poverty. In certain parts of the world, that distraction may be illness or sickness. It may be death. It may be persecution. We as Americans are definitely not without our share of distractions. Here it's things, you know, it's more comfy things like pleasure and freedoms and wealth and prosperity. Things that can distract and pull us away from that purpose. Because he knows that your time in this life to be effective is limited. He knows that. Okay? While we are eternal beings, we have a certain time in this life to be effective. So his thought is, man, if I can just distract them, if I can just get them to lose focus for a measly 40, 50 years of their life, they're done. You know, Dave Fagan always made a comment that was kind of sad to me. I mean, those of you that knew Dave, he was very passionate and very interested in the history of the Restoration Movement. And he always made a comment one time that it seemed that every generation had to have its own Restoration Movement. Why is that? Why is that? Yeah. If I can get this one generation of people to get focused on something else, then the next generation has to start all over. And they're so busy dealing with their own Christianity and spirituality, they don't think to look outside the walls. Satan has no problem with your religious convictions. He doesn't need you to do an about face. All he needs you to do is ignore everyone out in the darkness. You know, we've been, obviously everyone's familiar with Jay's books, but if you have not seen Luke's slides, PowerPoint slides of Jay's books, excellent, excellent tool. And we've been going through those in our Sunday evening assembly. And right now we are deep into the heart of looking at the second coming and looking into the concept of premillennialism. And I'll tell you, I mean, I went to a Baptist elementary school and that stuff was fed to me in second grade. Big time chart, you know, and everything. He has no problem with millions and millions and millions of people walking in a church building on Sunday morning. But if he can get them off focus, if he can get them looking for this wonderful sign that is going to signify the end of the age, instead of looking at that person that's hungry and thirsty or in prison, that's all he needs. Years ago, this is also when I was in high school. You know, Steve made a comment this morning that those young high school guys think they know it all, and I realize now that a few of my illustrations involved me in high school. But when we were in high school, we went to kind of this little camp thing you could take a youth group to. You know, we camped out in these neat dorms and things, and one of the things this camp had was this massive outdoor activity thing. You know, it had a climbing wall. It was all about conquering fear and working together and, you know, accomplishing these sort of things. And they had one point you could climb up a telephone pole and then walk across the telephone pole like 50 feet in the air. And so we were there, and I think we went a couple times, but a newer feature that they had was something called the Duo of Doom. And the Duo of Doom was, imagine a rope ladder, except the rope ladder were railroad ties. And it started probably about 6 feet in the air. And as the rungs of the ladder got farther up, they got farther apart. And this thing goes up like 80 feet. Okay? So we have a lot of people in our youth group, you know, trying to do this and everything. And being the competitive person that I am, I was ready to go. My cousin Mike, we're like, you know, let's do this. So we start climbing up this thing, and we get to about the third rung, and I remember to this day thinking, one more rung, and we've beat everybody. No one got higher than this rung. So we get up on that rung, and I remember looking at Mike and saying, yes, we did it, we're done. And he's like, what are you talking about? We're not to the top of the ladder yet. And I had no thought of reaching the top of the ladder. It was about being the highest, getting the highest, you know. And we got to the top of the ladder. I mean, largely due to, he helped with that. He was, any of you that knew Mike, very agile and very dexterous. But we got to the top of the ladder. But you realize my view of the goal, completely off of what the goal of the activity was, to get to the top of the ladder. Not to get a little higher than everyone else got. It's the top of the ladder. All Satan needs from us is one degree off. One degree off course. You know, I thought Jay might be here this morning. He's not, so this illustration isn't too relevant. But I actually looked up. If you were to head from Lima to Bozeman, Montana, on a plane, and you were off one degree, you would end up off course 30 miles. You'd end up in the middle of Yellowstone. Okay, portion of Yellowstone. 30 miles over that time, 1 degree off. You know, it's the same thing. I heard a lot of that with our gun outing. You know, I mean, if you're just off a little bit at a great distance, you're going to end up way off course. And that's what our enemy's going for. He wants to just get our attention to the goal just off a little bit. Just off a little bit. And then he's okay if we run. Keep running. But you're going to be off the goal. You're going to miss that goal. A few years ago, I was working at the bank. And we came out one day, and my assistant manager's car was completely covered on the front with honeybees. And it was interesting at the time. I never really thought of how bees work or anything like that. We had to have a beekeeper come and get them off. And but I kind of looked into it a little bit, and I have become very fascinated with the worker bee. Okay, the worker bee lives about 42 days. And from the moment that it's born, it has one purpose: to serve the hive. One purpose. It literally, its first responsibility, and it amazes me, you know, everything that we see in nature and in this life is only there to help us understand something spiritual. Okay? Every physical institution, every physical thing God has put here so that we can understand something greater and spiritual. And amazing similarities to me of the worker bee's life and the life of the Christian. From the moment that it is born, its first responsibility is to clean up its birthplace so that something else can be born. You know? I thought that was so neat. You know, a brand new Christian, I would want to encourage a brand new Christian, you know, really be hungry for the Word. Really work on building up your knowledge and be focused on growth and be learning that, about that stuff. Well, then that worker bee has other responsibilities. Almost right off the bat, it begins babysitting for younger bees. So it takes care of baby bees. Its response, this one blows my mind. Worker bees at some point are often responsible for keeping the hive cool. So the worker bees will actually line up around the queen or at certain parts of the hive, and they will fan the hive with their wings in order to keep it cool. Now, as everyone knows, you know, fanning your face with your, I hope everyone knows this, but fanning your face with your hand, you realize, exerts more energy than you're actually, you know, saving in fanning yourself. So the bee sacrifices its own well-being over and over and over again for the benefit of the hive or for the benefit of the queen. The last half of its life, okay, the last 2 weeks, it spends its entire time acquiring food for the hive. Providing for the hive. Okay? I think from what I read, it can sometimes visit, I want to say it was up to about 300 flowers a day. 300 flowers a day, common worker bee will. Okay? What was interesting to me is, in my research, there was no paid time off for the worker bee. There was no retirement period for the worker bee. And again, I'm comparing this to our spiritual life, not our physical life. Okay, no time off. No time where the worker bee took some time for himself and for his family. The worker bee is devoted to one purpose. And whenever you look over the life of the worker bee, that's what you see. You see no other purpose than sacrificing itself for the benefit of the hive. That's the Christian life, guys. That is focus. That is keeping an aim on the target. Okay, the attention to the target is that worker bee. And that's vital for our focus. And it is, everyone here knows how easy it is to lose focus. When you head into work or you head into some type of socially necessary activity, it's not an easy thing to keep God there in the forefront of your mind. And that brings me to my next point. You know, go to Ephesians chapter 5. Not only is it the attention to the target that's vital, but guys, this is an endurance race. Okay, we have to maintain that focus despite whatever temptations we may have to lose it or to drift away. And again, I appreciate Steve kind of hitting on this concept this morning with the guys. But Ephesians chapter 5, what am I at here? Verse 15. Therefore, be careful how you walk. Not as unwise men, but as wise. Why? Careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise. Making the most of your time, because the days are evil. The days are evil. What in the world does that mean? It's exactly what I said. We are eternal beings, but this body is finite. Okay? It's going to decay into nothing at some point in time. We are limited in our time of effectiveness in this life. I think James, that, you know, he really, really makes us feel good about our time in this life when he says, you're just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. We are limited in our time here. So we should walk as wise men, not as unwise men, making the most of our time. Because the days are evil. Guys, we as Christians, we have to become immune to apathy, which naturally occurs. Okay? The honeymoon period wears off. Everyone has heard that phrase. And it's the truth. You know, we look around in our society, yet again, I think, examples in this physical life that demonstrate to us something spiritual. We see marriage after marriage fall apart and fail. Because it's more based on the heat of the moment and the emotion of passion as opposed to a long-term commitment and a focus on something that is enduring. Okay? We see that happen time and time again. But we have to become immune to that. And I'm telling you, you know, we'll get real here for a moment. I don't know if other people have thought about this. I have. And I hope this is okay to the guys as I mention this. This is really a compliment. But what happens to this rally and to the Christians that we know in this world that are working when Mike Harbor is no longer here? What happens? What happens when Steve Doty is no longer here? Mike Hartman's no longer here. What happens? I've thought of that before. I wonder if others have thought about that. And I can tell you, sadly, at the moment, I can tell you one option that happens. Because our congregation's been living through it for about 8 years now. I can tell you what happens when the leader dies. And there may be this slight deviation of focus from Jesus to the leader. I can tell you what will happen. 7 years. Okay? I think I counted up, our seventh family came to me last night and said that they were going to be assembling at another congregation. A congregation that doesn't have scriptural leadership, that doesn't preach the truth, that's all wishy-washy, that's focused on events and, you know, opportunities for entertainment. You know, they have two basketball teams and they have a softball team and they have two or three cantatas a year and distractions. Distractions. I can tell you one thing that can happen if people are just off one degree. Guys, this is endurance. It's not just about being focused on the target in the passion of the moment and in the conviction of the moment, but it is enduring and maintaining. Again, that circles back to why Satan desires to just, you know, you can look back in the book of Revelation. Look at all the churches that were established by the apostles. Are they still here? Over time, people descend into complacency and they descend into apathy. And the worst thing that can happen is they continue to focus on their well-being or maybe their family's well-being, and everyone outside the walls stays outside the walls. It's dark and scary out there. We know the light's in here. We don't want to go out there. But that's what it's about. You know, I always circle back to Noah. Noah is an amazing illustration in Scripture of endurance, buddy. You talk about a project. From my research, building that ark was somewhere between 90 and 120 years of his life. Think of the longest project you've ever had. 90 and 120 years of his life. When I researched it years ago, I had never thought about the fact that Shem wasn't even born yet when he started. He didn't start with three strapping boys to help him build the ark. It was him. And we kind of get the feeling from that particular account that the environment around him might not have been very encouraging to him building the ark. Evangelism, I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but your Christian life and the purpose that we're charged with to walk the path of Christ will be the longest project you have in your life. It will be longer than your working years. It will be longer than your schooling years. It will be longer than your parenting years or your grandparents. It is the longest purpose that you have in this life. What's interesting about Noah is while that was 90 to 120 years of his life, it was less than 20% of his life. Guy lived 950 years. When he was done, he was done. As a Christian, the purpose that we're armed with to walk this path will be longer than any other project you have in your life. So the question is, will you maintain focus through that process? I have figured something out. People will make time for what's important to them. People will find money to pay for what is important to them. I don't know how, but they will. I mean, I own property, have apartments and stuff, but For a while, I've had a property I have has a tanning salon in it, and that's kind of where I have my tenants come in and pay and stuff like that. But I can't tell you how humorous it is to see a tenant that is delinquent on rent for the place they live come in and tan. It happens more than you think. People will make money for what's important to them. People will make sacrifices for what's important to them. They'll do it. There are times where, I mean, crying out loud. Anyone who's ever watched American Pickers or whatever, where did they get the money for all the junk? Well, most of the time they live in this beat-down shack, you know, or a pickup truck or something, but they've got $300,000 worth of junk and antiques out in the barn. You'll make time for what's important to you. And you'll have the resources for what's important to you, and you'll make sacrifices for what's important to you, and it will be evident through your life. When you look back at Johann Gutenberg, there's no question about what his purpose was and what was important to him. When you look back at the faithful individuals of Scripture, there's no question about what was important to them, what they were focused on. That focus will be evident. And what I want to encourage you today is where that focus needs to be. As we have looked through the concept of premillennialism, I guess that's kind of what inspired a little different perception of the Hebrews passage. Because all of those people are running along with their eyes on Jesus. It's like their eyes are looking up, looking for that sign of Jesus' return, and they're stepping over everybody down here that's hungry and thirsty and needs help. And for any of you, I mean, my dad's a staunch Baptist premillennialist. He reads Ezekiel, Daniel, and Revelation over and over and over again. Nothing else. Nothing else. No concept whatsoever of seeking and saving the lost. No concept whatsoever of looking to other people. It's about, where's the sign? Where's the sign? When's it going to happen? Man's going to happen soon. Look at the stuff that's happened. And that stuff doesn't mean squat. Distraction. Distraction. That generation will die. And who knows if the temple will be rebuilt. I don't think it will be, because it's a great distraction. And the generation will die confused. Man, I was certain, growing up in that Baptist elementary school, I had three teachers prophesy Jesus' return. You know, it was all about looking for the sign. It's, you know, this is when it's coming. For those of you interested, he's coming in 1994. That's when he'll be back. Told a bunch of third graders when Jesus was coming back. Distraction. Focusing on Jesus, you know, I mean, going over to Belarus with Direct Connect. I mean, you go into those orphanages and it's just, they don't care about gun control. They don't care about looking for some sign of the temple being rebuilt. They don't care one bit about homosexuality and how it's affecting our country and, you know, all these things that are frustrating, but they don't care. They need somebody to love them. That's how they'll see the love of Christ. I'm the treasurer of a nonprofit in Connersville called the Hope Center. It's essentially a pregnancy center. We try to encourage, you know, try to help families and gals to avoid committing abortion and so forth. But I like that the organization has branched out thicker into the families, providing counseling for families and so forth. Had a girl come in about a month and a half ago. I want to say the girl is 17. She's back in the room with a counselor explaining how she's sleeping with six or seven guys and isn't happy, can't find anyone to love her. Her father is out in the waiting room telling all the staff how much of a prostitute she is. That girl doesn't care about these distractions. That girl doesn't care if a religious person's running along, focused on themselves, keeping their eyes up and not looking down at her. That girl needs the love of Christ demonstrated to her. The love of Christ, I am convinced, it will not be shown to the lost through the words you say. It won't. At one point in time, I thought, man, you memorize everything, you're good to go. You know, you develop an eloquent speaking style and you're good to go. It won't be demonstrated at all through what you say. It'll be demonstrated through what you do. If you feed that individual that needs something to eat. If you provide something to drink to the person that's thirsty. If they're in prison and you show them love and compassion when their relative, their father, may be out there saying how horrible you are. That's what will make the difference. It's not about just recognizing Jesus on the throne. It's not about recognizing that, yes, we have this glorious and wonderful purpose. And yay for us, we understand what the purpose is. It's about arming ourselves with that purpose. So that for this time we're in this hunk of flesh, we can be effective. We can have an impact on those people. Because they are everywhere. They don't care about all the stuff going on. You know, those are distractions designed to lead us off course of what's important. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Thank you.